Welcome to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. I'm Joey Roberts.
In my community, you know, it's an expensive lifestyle. I live in a world where kosher food is probably 20% more than regular food. The holidays, Shabbat, you know, we spoke about Shabbat earlier. You know what Shabbat looks like? It's two big meals. That Friday night meal, there's the Shabbat day meal, you know, the next Saturday day meal. It's a meal. And I'm hosting my family actually this week, which means there's going to be three extra couples there, many children. It's expensive.
Pearl Osh, welcome to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. You have helped thousands of people build a global Amazon brand. Today, we're going to dive into making money on Amazon and your unique perspective on running and growing a company while keeping a healthy relationship with money.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I was waiting for this. Like I told you before we started, I cleared my calendar. It's been a crazy last few weeks. And today was like, okay, we have something to look forward to. So I'm actually really excited to be on. Thanks for having me. I guess just a short introduction about, you know, who I am. So again, I'm Pearl Osh. I am a mother of three, a wife. I live in Brooklyn, New York in the Hasidic community. Whoever's familiar with who we are. Yes, we're the ones that you read about in the news, but a lot of fake news. So maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. We actually, you know, we love to do what we do out here in business. So I'm happy to dive into that. And I'm the COO or slash integrator, as we call it in the EOS system at Frisbee. Like you said, we help brands expand their businesses globally. And we are Amazon's number one recommended provider for that. So yeah, again, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be, you know, talking with you.
Thrilled to have you, and congrats on being a preferred partner with Amazon. That is always an achievement, and we love to recognize that, especially on the Fearless Sellers podcast, focusing on women-run businesses, and being a preferred partner is something to celebrate. So huge congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So living in Brooklyn in a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood, mom of three, running a business. My friend, what is a typical work week like in your world?
Yes. It's a big one. It's a big one. Let me tell you, it's a crazy life. But you know what? The only way it works is if it's in the calendar. If it's on the calendar, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't happen. And sometimes I might come across as just being unreasonable and just like, you know, maybe snobby, for lack of better words, for, you know, people that know me, but like, I would not survive without it just being planned in advance. So if I want to do a night out or go for lunch, it's not like, so Pearl, are you available? It's just not going to happen. So everything needs to be planned. A massive yecker, as they say in German, which is like, being on time is like my thing. And that's a pet peeve of mine. But yeah, it's the only way, staying organized as much as I can. And yes, it's a dysfunctional, crazy life. Let's be honest.
It's beautiful, crazy life. And what was the word? Yacker?
Yacker. Yacker is like that person, that annoying person that's always on time. You know, that friend that's always the first one there. And when they say they'll pick you up, that's me. So if I tell you I'm going to pick you up 8:15, I'll be there 8:15. Yeah, I'm that person.
I am too. And I cannot be late. I've tried to be late and I'm still early.
Yeah, I was that kid in school that turned on the lights in the building in the morning. That's what I'm remembered for.
I love
that. In school. I just want to say I didn't do well in school, just as an FYI. But I turned on the lights. Yeah, I was a terrible student.
Well, let's talk about growing up as Pearl. Was there pressure to be an entrepreneur? Was there pressure to be good in school?
Yes, I definitely was in a school that was extremely academic driven. And I guess for those reasons, you know, I'm a perfectionist. And if I can't do it 100% and I don't have a plan on how to get there, I have a hard time even beginning. And that's why, you know, in my role as an integrator, I just love it, because in order for me to be successful, I need to have a plan. I need to have everything documented, the calendar thing, like I said. And I think for those reasons, you know, growing up, I was so hard on myself that I just wasn't able to get there. I just wasn't able to get there academically. And for those reasons, after I got married and then having the opportunity, you know, where I'm at right now, I am so hard on myself to get there and just be the absolute best version of a COO. I think I push myself more than I should. And I keep telling myself, okay, in a few weeks, I'll take a step back when this is in place and when that's in place. But I know I'm lying to myself. I am just a perfectionist, and I want to get there so badly that I just do everything I can. And yeah, I get burnt out here and there. But then I learn to take a step back when I need to. And I have different practices that I put in, you know, in place, and we could get into that if you're interested. But I would say, because I was hard on myself growing up is the reason why I'm pushing myself so hard right now. And I would definitely say for those reasons, I'm in the position that I'm in. And obviously, you know, God helps that. And I definitely want to recognize that. I'm a religious person. You see that it's black and white. So without that, it wouldn't be possible. But I would definitely say because I had it very hard growing up is why I push myself so hard now.
And you're taking a lot of responsibility saying that you were hard on yourself. It was hard growing up. So that is a very self-aware statement that I'm hearing from you. Let's touch on just childhood. Were your parents hard on you? Is that part of the Orthodox, growing up Orthodox?
So I would say every home is different. There isn't that blanket rule of, like, you know, Orthodox being hard on their kids. But I would say that obviously the Holocaust definitely had a big, you know, effect on the way we were raised. And I would say my parents were a product of Holocaust survivors, children, which were very hard on their kids. And with that being said, you know, with my mother, I'm the oldest, which is a very, you know, big part of, you know, how I was raised. And then I have my youngest sister now. I'm coming from a family of six. My youngest sister right now is being raised so differently. It's comical to watch. But they were hard on us just because they wanted us to be successful. But I don't think they had the right tools to be able to say, you know, this is how to do it, you know, and encourage us in the healthiest way to be successful, which I think is very different about what the Orthodox community is like today. Today, it's all about, you know, loving yourself and taking care of yourself and putting in the right, you know, help in place. You know, therapy is a very big thing, and mental health awareness is a very big thing, which is very, very different than how our parents were raised. So I would say, with that being said, the way I was raised was, yes, I would say they pushed us, probably not in the way that I would say, reflecting now and being so self-aware. Like you said, I am very self-aware. Vulnerability is a very big thing here. I don't know if you know Brené Brown and what she preaches,
love
but
I
love her books. I love what she, you know, what she stands for, her TED Talks. That's just how we're approaching the next generation now.
I love that. It evolved, you learn, and I can totally see the cultural coming from the Holocaust and the burden on the families and how that culture leaks in. And you almost have to look at it as a blessing because you are so strong and you're just killing it. So turning those lights on in the morning at school, being the first kid, and all the way up to COO of Frisbee. Now, yeah. I want to jump into, you started in Amazon, and this kind of plays into being hard on yourself and a go-getter at the same time, because you started with gift baskets, right? Like selling gift baskets.
Yep. That was many years ago. How many years ago? Probably about 8 years ago. We started the company, my husband and I, Ephraim. We started a company called Benevolo Gifts. Benevolo, you know, with the word benevolence in it, the act of giving. We worked so hard. We worked so hard to try to make this thing successful. But we were young. Let me be clear. I got married at the age of, I was almost 19. And we started the business probably, I would say, at the age of 21, 22. We were young. Amazon was very, very different than it is today. The help that people have today versus what we had then is completely different. I'm talking about service providers and, you know, just mentors out there. So, you know, we started out with this idea of like, we'll start with gift baskets for the holidays, Christmas, you know, Valentine's Day, Thanksgiving, candies, nuts, chocolates. And we did really well, I would say, in the beginning. But the minute we started with overhead is where we got stuck. You know, renting our first, leasing our first warehouse, and then the staff. And it was a very seasonal business. And in between, it was just an impossible situation. So we got to a point where we were doing over $1 million within like a 6-week span, you know, the Thanksgiving, Christmas time. But wow. We weren't able to, yeah, it was pretty amazing. But we weren't able to become profitable, you know, net profitable because of the rest of the year, the overhead. Now, you know, fast forward, that's why my husband's now in the warehousing business, because he learned, like, if he would have had that warehousing solution then where he could just sublease or just, you know, go to a 3PL like what he's running right now, he wouldn't have that overhead. And then myself, you know, I was working part-time here at, you know, we were First Choice Shipping, rebranded now to Frisbee. I was just a regular part-time employee doing customer service. Never dreamt I would get to this place. But all the things that I've learned through running that Amazon business was teaching me about, you know, what does it mean to be an Amazon business? What do sellers want to hear? What are they struggling with? And with that, we were able to build these two other businesses that we're both running now.
Wow. So you and your husband started with the gift basket business, which sounds like a very wild ride, too much overhead. Oh, yeah. But really good sales, which I completely understand because I ran a business where I also had to get a warehouse and I had to pay employees, and they have, you know, needs too as employees, and it is a lot of pressure. And not to call you out for being young, but, you know, being 19 in your early 20s, that's a lot to handle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's impressive. So what happened to the gift business? Like, you closed it?
So we sold it. And I don't even want to try to make it sound like I sold it to Thrasio or to any of these big people and I made this crazy amount of money. We sold it for like a couple thousand dollars, just literally. We totally missed the boat when it came to the aggregator space. I wonder what would have happened if it would have been like 2 years later. But we sold it, exited it. It's a painful period. Like, I wouldn't even like the word benevolo in our household is like, don't even talk about it. It's, you know, we learned so much about it. We grew from it, but like, yeah, it was a nightmare.
And the pain point is money, right? Like, let's just say what hits hard.
Money, 100%, 100%. Cash flow. We got stuck.
You're listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. If you like what you're hearing, click the subscribe button. We have new content coming out all the time and you don't want to miss out. And it's a good lesson to learn that early, but it is also a lesson that it cuts deep. Like, when you have these big aspirations and the money is not coming in, like how did that impact you, your marriage?
It was rough. It was very, very rough. You know, we learned a lot of lessons then. It's something that I am so passionate about right now. You know, just the other day, there was this person on LinkedIn posting something about, you know, he basically is an affiliate for credit cards. So he tries to get people to sign up for a credit card and get points. And then you could travel first class and you could buy these gifts and, you know, all these beautiful things. And I am just a fervent disbeliever in that because I've been there. So what it did to us is we started using credit cards and we got into massive debt, and it was very, very hard on us. And I remember chancing upon Dave Ramsey's book on, you know, the basic principles on getting back on track. And I read that book. I remember it was on Shabbat. You know, I'm Shabbat observant. So over the weekend, had a, you know, great read. It was quiet. It was relaxing. And we signed up, was after Shabbat when, you know, Shabbat, we basically closed down anything related to weekday. So there's no phones, no internet, no nothing. You're completely shut down, which is something beautiful, just saying, getting that peace of mind, which we don't get to have during the week. And we signed up for his Financial Peace University, and we learned the baby steps and all the steps on getting back on track. And we learned about how to get debt paid up and how bad credit cards are. So when I saw that LinkedIn post, I was that person, that annoying person that said, no, don't get credit cards, and teach your children and all these young couples getting married about how to manage their finances, because somehow it's like this taboo topic that nobody wants to talk about. But we learned the hard way. And I remember taking that scissor and we cut up those 17 credit cards we had, and we paid up our debt. We paid it up, and we never turned back. And I could say that, thankfully, thank God, right now we're you know, financially safe. But going back into those old habits, I'm one of those people that will sit around that, you know, table when you're with your family and when you're with your friends, and people tell you about all the great things they're doing with their credit cards, and I'm going to be like, get rid of it, get rid of it. It's a snake that creeps up at you at one point.
Yeah, that's good advice from somebody who has lived it, and you dug yourself out. And we all love those stories, right? Of, okay, there was the tragedy and here is now you're on top, but it's never good when it's your own story, right? Like that's when it doesn't feel good. But congratulations on growing, and both of you grew into separate Amazon businesses. So your husband, you said, is a 3PL in the warehouse. So just for everybody listening, what is 3PL?
It's a third-party logistics provider, which is basically, it's a warehouse location that you could either use them for labeling requirements, or just going in and out from the warehouse, you know, from the port directly into Amazon, or pretty much anything related to just labor that you would have to do yourself. And there is like this preconceived notion that people have that if they're going to do it themselves, they're going to save money. But I've been there, and I could tell you that overhead, first off, you know, just a headache. Let's take away money for just a minute. You know, the headache of having to deal with the people, the processes, the day in and day out is a huge, huge burden. But finding that right partner, you know, just giving, let me say his name, it's Tactical Logistics, just for the sake of, let me be a good wife. But they do a great job. And a lot of sellers are starting to realize that, especially now with what Amazon was doing with the inventory limits and all that restrictions of, you know, not being able to send in quantities that they're needing, that a warehouse is needed. And getting that burden onto yourself, and then, you know, business might be up, might be down, and then being stuck like the way we were, it is a huge, huge risk. So a third party logistics, or a 3PL in short, is basically a warehouse location that you get to do whatever you need to do that you wouldn't have to yourself.
Very cool. Yes. And there are so many benefits, and depending how people run their Amazon business, it can just be a lifesaver to have somewhere and somebody to help you store inventory and help you get it to the warehouse. So I think it's super cool that came out of the gift basket, learned that. And then you went into expansion, and tell me about Frisbee.
Yeah, sure. So just to give you an idea, we actually tried with Benevolo to expand the business, and I learned so much then. We tried selling in the UK, and the biggest lesson we learned, and just a shout out to Jana Krekic from YLT Translations, because what she does is like a huge, huge, like, it seems so trivial, but I know personally what we went through with it. We were selling gift baskets, right? So we're sending it to the UK. Firstly, going through the whole process, the compliance process, the tax compliance, the product compliance, and all that red tape was a nightmare. And that's what Frisbee does. And we could talk about that. But one huge mistake we did is we listed our product as gift baskets. Now, why did we list it that way? It's, you know, in the UK, English is the same language, right? It's the perfect marketplace to expand into, less saturated market, similar culture, perfect. For 6 months, this inventory was just sitting. It wasn't moving. And we saw other listings that were doing well. And we're like, why? Why is this happening? Until we realized they don't call it gift baskets. They call it hampers. They call it hampers. Who would ever know? So what Yana actually does is, and by the way, when we rebranded, I sent her the word Frisbee. And I'm like, Yana, please just check that this word isn't a bad word in any language that I don't know. And she checked in on like, I don't even know, dozens of languages. And thank God it didn't mean anything bad, because then the name would have to be Nyx. And I loved the name when we got it from this branding agency we worked with. But the localization part and the translation part is so integral, and this tiny piece that people just overlook. So I could say that's what I learned. But going back to Frisbee, yeah. So what we do is we basically are that one-stop shop for sellers looking to expand globally for the logistical side of things. So the product compliance, you know, can I ship this into this other country? What are the labeling requirements? Do I have to change any of the ingredients in a different language so people can understand it? Or do I need special licensing? Things like that. So those are, you know, from the product compliance side, that's what we help with. And then we also do, we help with the tax compliance. We work with different partners to help with that. We do the actual registration for Canada, which is the NRI registration. And then ultimately with the actual logistics, the shipping, which we specialize in. Our niche is small parcel delivery, or SPD as Amazon calls it, which is loose box shipments. You could ship up to 100 boxes. It doesn't mean it has to be a small shipment, but the niche is that it's there fast and it's a quick turnaround. So if you're running low in inventory, like I said, with Amazon having those restrictions, you could constantly just, you know, send it in and it's quick. And you don't have to worry about your BSR, you know, bestseller ranking going down because you're out of stock. So yeah, that's what we do in a nutshell.
That's very cool. For Amazon sellers, when is a good time to expand globally? Like, is there a sales mark? Like, I was always wondering with my business, because for some reason, the products I were selling, I was getting a lot of calls from Australia and New Zealand. And nice. And this was in 2021. And in my head, I was like, well, I need to be at like $600,000 of overall sales before I even expand globally. I don't even know why that number was in my head. I probably just made it up, or some standard for myself.
I like it. It's good to set standards for yourself. I'll just say this. I highly discourage people expanding if they haven't done everything they possibly can in the native country that they're in. So if it's the opportunity when you feel like you've done everything in terms of like your images, you know, everybody talks about that main image on your listing. Have you done everything to make sure that that's in the best place it could be? Is your PPC aligned properly? Is, you know, your inventory in check? Do you have like an inventory limit issue, or just are you not getting inventory fast enough from your manufacturer? All these different things, having that in mind first, and then of course, making sure that you have the proper capacity that when you are expanding, you could keep up with it. You know, we see a lot of sellers are sending out that first shipment and then they just get stuck. For whatever reason, I don't have the right people, I don't have the right time. I'm going to say this, it's good excuses, right? I believe everything is good excuses at the end of the day. But the reality is you have to be fully invested. And the only way you're going to be fully invested is if you are in the best place possible. If you're selling in the US and you're like, okay, I maxed out my opportunity. And it doesn't have to be a dollar amount. It's just like when you know you checked every single box from that checklist, okay, now I'm ready to go expand.
That's great advice. Yes. Do every single thing you can in whatever country you've launched in, area you've launched in, and then it's time to expand. That is much better than getting a dollar amount stuck in your head. And looking back, there's a lot more that I wanted to do in the US, and that probably would have taken up more of my time and resources, I'll say, that expanding globally would have been very difficult unless I had partnered with you or knew that Frisbee was there to help me. So I think what your company's doing is very cool. And you said you started, what was your first position at Frisbee? Sorry, you said you started in customer service?
Yep, that's right. So, you know, just a fun fact, I was working at a car leasing place at that time, literally out of like this trailer. It was just a horrible, horrible workspace. It was, I don't even know what I was thinking. But you know, when you get very stuck in a position and you don't want change because you're just comfortable and you don't want to start learning a whole new business. I was in that situation and my husband was just so adamant about me getting out of it. He saw how miserable I was. So he was just going through the local newspaper classifieds and he saw this position being advertised and they specifically were not looking for a part-time person at that time. And I was looking for a part-time position because I had a 6-month-old at that time, my oldest, my 10-year-old boy was 6 months old at that time. And without me knowing, he updated my resume and he sent it in and he didn't say anything. I get this phone call randomly from Saul, the CEO, and he's like, oh, so I saw your, you know, resume. Would you like to come down for an interview? And I was like, okay. Someone set me up here. And I just played along and we went down for an interview. It was great. Again, they didn't want anybody part-time, but they called up one of my colleagues at this car leasing place. And he's like, listen, I'm telling you, it's worth it. Just interview, see how it goes. Fine. I got hired. Thank God. And when I got in there, it was just like a mom and pop shop. I can't explain how it was just, you know, printing labels for clients. It wasn't just this professional situation at all. And slowly it was like, okay, we're going to implement, you know, when people call in, there's actually a phone greeting. Let's implement a desk ticketing system. Let's actually, you know, when we pick up the phone, say, hi, this is the company you're calling, you know, slowly. And I ended up evolving into more of like, you know, like the mother in the office / office manager. Then I became head of sales and marketing. And then I came at the Saul one day and I said, listen, I think it's time for a title change. I looked up the name, I Googled it, and it seems like COO would make sense. I had no idea what that meant at that time. I promise that. And that's how I became a COO. At this time, like I go to coaching and I have my mastermind groups that I go to, and I'm very, very well aware of the huge responsibility I have. But yeah, I slowly evolved into it and I love it. I just love it. So I'm with a company for about 9 years now and it's been a journey. I never dreamt I would be at this place. Never.
Pearl, I love it. How many years in were you when you marched into the CEO's office and said, hey, I am now your COO?
Oh boy. I would say 3 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. And at this point I have a stake in the business as well. So I'm pretty fortunate.
That is brilliant. Everybody listening, go march into your boss's office and tell them the exact position that you deserve, because I know you earned it and you know that you deserved it. You just had to go and tell them.
That's right. That's right. And if you need that boost, that B13 shot or B9, whatever the right vitamin is, message me. I'll be happy to help you.
Yeah, I'm all about those B shots too. For those who don't get B shots, these are vitamin shots you can get that give you a little boost of energy. And I think Pearl will second this. It kind of makes me feel a little superhuman for the week.
And sometimes it's a physical shot, Joey. And sometimes it's just that, you know, that person that has your back that makes up for it. And that's good enough.
I prefer the actual shots, but yeah, encouragement is good too.
I hear you. I hear you. I get you completely.
I love it. All right, let's keep this ball rolling into money. We all work to make money. And in the Amazon space, I get the question daily, how can I make money on Amazon? How much money will I make? What is the money with Amazon? And I know you're faced with the same exact questions. How do you respond with those questions and also with how it relates to your life and your relationship with money?
Yeah. So, you know, we spoke about this before we got on. I live in a very, in my community, you know, it's an expensive lifestyle. We live in a world where kosher food is probably 20% more than just, you know, regular food. we sent to religious schools, which is also a huge expense. And the holidays, Shabbat, you know, we spoke about Shabbat earlier. You know what Shabbat looks like? It's two big meals. That Friday night meal, there's the Shabbat day meal, you know, the next Saturday day meal. It's a meal. And I'm hosting my family actually this week, which means there's going to be three extra couples there, many children. It's expensive. I would say this, you know, obviously getting into my role, one of the things that I probably didn't realize when I asked for that role change was how involved I actually have to be when it comes to running a P&L and looking at that P&L and just studying it and understanding it. And I think, and just for the listeners that might not be aware of that, what that is, that's actually the profit and loss statement of your company. And what I did realize after working with, you know, thankfully so many brands and speaking to so many people running those brands, Amazon brands, people don't even look at their P&Ls, which I think is terrible. They don't have their books in order and they have no idea what their bottom line is. And the nature of an Amazon business is that there's just a turnover and it could go on for many years without somebody even realizing that they are just running at net zero or net minus zero, you know? And I think for starters, getting that bookkeeper in place and making sure that your books are in order, that would be my first, you know, recommendation. And then study it. Know what's going in and out and find out where can I cut corners? Can I negotiate with my vendors? Can I get better shipping rates? I know I'm shooting myself in the leg when I say that. But yes, negotiate with that carrier that you're working with or that provider like Frisbee and see if I ship more, could you guys get me better rates? What could we do to figure something out? Especially today with inflation, you know, everything went up. I know a bottle of milk went up in price. The yogurts my kids are eating went up in price. It's so important to start figuring out what can I do? And then of course, implementing budgeting. I'm a huge budgeter. Like I said, Dave Ramsey is my person when it comes to, you know, managing finances. And people are like, oh, Dave Ramsey's not for people that are successful. That's so not true. So not true. Always live with that mindset. And I would say this, the people that you see are very successful, I guarantee you they have a budget. Their budget might be crazy, but they have a budget. They know what's going in and what's going out. It's not possible to sustain wealth without that. That's what I could say.
Yeah, that's good. The relationship with money is to actually know what money is going in and out and have a budget. And you're right. I do see Amazon sellers just start selling and not think about the bottom line. I like to call it free money. Like, go find your free money, renegotiate with your suppliers, figure out, like you said, with Frisbee or whoever you're shipping with, if you can ship more to get less. And then a lot of my listeners know that I push margins. I try to find free money in the margin. It costs nothing to see if you can raise your price. And there's an art to do it so that you don't upset the Amazon algorithm. But I always look in any business I have, like, find your free money and know what's going in and out. And it is an uncomfortable discussion, whether it is at work or if it's at home. So with your kids, how do you talk to them about money? I have a 5-year-old who is money obsessed in the form of needs to buy everything and wants to add everything. I mean, we added 18 toys this morning before school to my Amazon cart.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't buy anything, but I let him put it in the cart because he's just so stuff obsessed. Now he's 5, right? So I'm going through the motions with him, but I'm curious for you, like, what is the family relationship with money since you've had ups and downs?
So, wow, that's such a great question. So I'll say this. I think it's very important that kids know they have to earn it. They have to earn it. It's just, it's not something that just is like, you know, I flick with my fingers or I just give a snap and like it appears. You know, I was watching the other day, I was taking out money for my housekeeper in the bank on Fridays. I pay her. So I needed to take out cash and I'm at the ATM machine and I was watching this guy. He had this little kid in the carriage and he's telling this kid, watch, look, I'm going to put my card in. I'm going to press in some buttons and wow, money came out. I bit my lip. I wanted to so badly tell this guy, you just did the worst thing ever. You taught your kid what? that we go to the bank and we just take money out. And that's where money comes from. Terrible, terrible. I have this habit, you know, when I come home, I try to shut down and I do have, this is my phone. I just want to show you, it has actually, I don't know if you could see that on the camera. Yep, you could see that. It actually has a seal that it's kosher. I'll just tell you what that means. That literally means that this phone is app free, no distractions, talk and text only. So when I get home, I try my best. I'm not going to say I'm perfect. I have a tablet in the house where I'm able to, you know, look up messages or my emails from work, but I do try to plug it as much as possible. But when I do need to take that meeting and I go to the office and in my basement at home, I tell my kids, I'm like, kids, mommy is working hard for you. So I could buy you clothing. So I could take you on trips. They have to know that there is, you have to actually put some input for you to enjoy the output, right? It doesn't just happen naturally. And going back to my point about earning, I do have these charts with them hanging on their fridge, and they know by doing good things, they're going to earn something. So is it me going to the ice cream store with mommy, myself? Can I then maybe just forego the ice cream store and combine it and get more points so we could go on a trip together? Or can I wait even longer? My daughter wants this dollhouse that every time we go into the local supermarket, they have it like right in the front every time. It's the same tantrum when we go shopping for the week. It's right there. Mommy, can I buy it? Can I buy it? And I'm like, yes, you can, but you have to earn it. So with her chart, she can then just maybe combine her points to 100 points, and then she could get that dollhouse. So it's all about them understanding that they have to earn it. But I just want to say from a parenting side, it's not healthy for kids to feel like everything needs to be earned. So I will throw in those times. Like we went to the ice cream shop yesterday, just a one-off. It was the beginning of the month. And it on the Jewish calendar, it's like considered a exciting day, just launching the month. And for that, I'm like, guys, okay, we're going to the ice cream store together. No strings attached. So I'm not like this massively disciplined person when it comes to being like, no, everything needs to be earned. They need to know mommy's there. I love you. So I'm going to take you out for that reason. But when there are those big things like that 18, you know, toys in the shopping cart, yes, you could have it, but you're going to have to earn it. So that's my approach with the kids. And whenever they see money or just anything, I try to like be very mindful, obviously on their level, give them to understand, what does it mean? What does money actually mean? What's that interaction? What's that relationship between humans and money?
I love that. And you're staying positive. You're saying, yes, you can have that. It has to be earned. Yes. It is. I try to be mindful with the word no. I don't like to say no, which is obviously how I ended up with 18 toys in my Amazon cart. Because I'm like, well, yes, we can add all this to the cart. And now you have to earn your 5 stars on your sticker chart to pick one thing from the cart.
There you go. Can I just say that kids feel safe that way? You know, when kids grow up where everything is just yes, 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 yes. And I learned this when I have 3 kids and we have, you know, they're on a journey like everybody else. And I used to be that person. I'm like, yeah, I would love to be that just easygoing, yes, everything kind of mother. But I learned one thing, that if kids grow up with everything being just okay and everything is yes, they also start feeling like, is there ever no? Like, what's if I'm like in danger? You know, is my mother or my father going to be there to say, no, that's not okay. They need to have that balance. It's very, very healthy for them to sometimes be like, oh, you got to earn it, or it's no, it's totally fine.
It is. Parenting is such a journey in itself. And I'm sure with 3 kids, you're learning each of them differently. And then you have to instill this relationship with money while living the expensive life that you lead, being Orthodox. So it's like, well, actually, this is what we're going to spend money on. And this brings me back to a question I really want to ask you. So wait, you have a kosher phone?
I have a kosher phone. Yes. Joey, try it. It's kosher.
Okay, wait, tell me about this phone. You just showed it. So if anybody is watching on YouTube, if you're listening, go over to YouTube. Pearl is holding up her kosher phone for you guys to see. All right, tell me about the kosher phone.
Okay, so this is like an initiative that the local schools have been working with the parents for some time now, and I'm so grateful. You know, nobody likes to be told what to do when it comes to parenting. You know, it feels like I'm just not good enough, right? Nobody wants to feel that way. But let me tell you one thing. I tried doing this myself a couple years ago. It was in the summer, actually right before the summer, where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get something called a flip phone. You know, like the old phones, you know, it opens and closes. There's nothing
Motorola.
On it.
Yeah.
Motorola. Exactly. I'm going to get myself a Motorola. I'm going to leave my smartphone in the office and I'm going to disconnect. I need it. I need it mentally. Okay. Let's take religion out of it. Mentally, I just need that break. And it was just amazing. I came home from work. We put on music. We danced, you know, the kids and I was just plugged out. There's something about it. Something when you're forced to be plugged out. And came the summer. I was upstate. I go upstate in the summer with friends. It's very nice. The kids get to run around. It's beautiful. We live in the city right now. So there isn't like the grass that you could run around in. So we go upstate in the summer. So the kids have that space. And the smartphone came back out. You know, the kids are busy right now. I don't have to be so checked in, and everybody has their phones out. So got to be like everybody else. And I came back and I had a very hard time switching back into that mode of shutting down. And let's be real, we're addicted to our phones.
Yes.
And my son at that time was 8. And he tells me, Ma, when are you going to get that flip phone again? When are you going to get that kosher phone again? Oh, sweet. That was so painful. What did he say? Ma, when are you going to be available for me again?
Oh.
Oh my gosh, that was so painful. And I was like, I have to do something about it. And the schools are constantly just pushing that narrative. Guys, get the kosher phone. Get it. Because, you know, they're the ones that see the kids. They're raising our children. Our children are there, what, 80% of their day? So that's when I was like, that was 2 years ago. I got this phone. I was just the best thing I've ever done. And I will say, I have my moments. I'm not going to lie. It happens. And my people know I'm a little bit maybe too much on that tablet of mine at home. I mean, I'm answering messages and whatever, but I'm still mindful of the fact that like it is the best thing that I've ever done. And I'm definitely a huge advocate about try to leave your phone. Is it 2 hours? Give yourself what it is. You know, if it's an hour, 2 hours, it's going to do so much good for yourself personally and then the people around you.
Wow, that is very inspiring. Can I just get an app on my phone that's like a kosher app and it'll put my phone in like kosher mode?
Yes, by the way, there is an app for that. There is.
All right, that'll be my homework this week. I'm going to try that just because I learned from you. I will try to get into kosher mode and I'll let you know how that goes.
That's it. Let me know.
Speaking of unique perspectives and efficiency, you run your company Frisbee with EOS. Can you touch on what that is and like why it works for you?
Sure. So I have my beautiful EOS. Let me show that. My EOS folder, old fashioned.
She's got a big binder, like as if it was your first day at a restaurant working and you get handed the food guide. That's basically what I just saw.
Literally. It's this huge book, or like you said, a binder of tools. It's a toolbox. It's a toolbox on how to run your business. So EOS is actually a system that I believe over 100,000 businesses run on it. It's sort of like, it stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. It's sort of a system on how to do meetings, how to set up the hierarchy in the business. Really every step on how you run the business is there. Like there's something to reference back. You know, like there's the Bible for how people run their lives. This is like the Bible on how to run your business legitimately. So we actually have what we call an EOS implementer that comes in once a quarter now. And he basically helps us set up the quarter properly. So let me just give you a rundown of like, what does EOS look like on a week to week basis? First off, having everybody in the right seat, which is huge, you know, figuring out is everybody, first off, right fit, number one, matches your core values, the right personalities, and then does everybody actually want their job and have the capacity? They call it GWC. Do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have the capacity for it? That was like the first step. That was a hard day. That was like what we call the focus day. It was a hard day. We actually switched things around. It was, I had my head of sales then. She raised her hand and she's like, you know what? I actually hate my seat. I hate it. Wow. I love ops. I love operations. And she shines right now in operations. It's just beautiful. And we got somebody else for our head of sales. He just started class a couple of weeks ago, hence why I'm so busy right now. But he's a rock star. And I am just absolutely thrilled because we never would have had that honest conversations. Like, you're talking about many years that somebody's in the seat, okay? And it's just amazing when you could bring in that honesty and that vulnerability into the business, which EOS forces you to get into. And it is also how we run our meetings. Just for example, what a meeting looks like. We all start with our state of mind, a personal share, a business share, just clears the air. Everybody feels safe. And then we get into, you know, discussing issues and we really, really get into it. We just discuss the issue at hand and we solve it together as a group. And we do this on a leadership level. We do this on a personal one-on-one level. You know, I do this with every one of my direct reports and they do that the same with their direct reports. And it's something that just cascades further and further and further. I could just say this, EOS has changed the business. And for us, it's been amazing. It's just healthy, healthy growth. And if anybody wants to do that, I get nothing out of it. I can tell you this. I just know one thing. You guys are just going to be happier. It's a hard journey, but if you want to run an EOS, pick up the book Traction. It tells you a lot about it. Yeah, let me know what you think.
Very cool. One of the trends I think entrepreneurs are going is listening more to employees. And that's the way it needs to go. And it sounds like that's what your company is doing versus people who've just been in their jobs for 30 years, 10 years, 20, 30 years. And it's just, that's their job. It's an opportunity to raise your hand and say, hey, actually, I think I would like to be more client facing instead of behind the scenes. So congratulations on putting your employees first and letting them shine. That's probably why your business is growing and so successful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And EOS titles don't matter, by the way. So I'm not even the COO. I'm the integrator. I'm the integrator. I just have to integrate things, period. Same for the CEO. He's the visionary. Titles don't matter. And I think that's part of the beauty. Like I said, listening to your employees, taking away the title, taking away the ego just makes you so much more approachable. And like I tell everybody on my team, challenge me, please challenge me. I hire smarter people than me so I could know better. And taking the titles away, I think was a big one.
Yeah, drop the ego. We're all on the same team and we have the same goal.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Pearl, we're going to have to say goodbye soon. But before we go, is there anything that we have not touched on that you'd like to share?
I want to know what makes you so amazing. How are you such a good listener? I'm genuinely asking.
I try to listen. I've worked on listening skills because I like to talk so much. I can just talk and talk. But what gets me is I like people's stories. I like to know and learn from other people. I don't have all the answers and I feel more secure in whatever I'm doing when I can learn and know what other people also have going on. That motivates me. I get energy and motivation from other people. So that's a really nice question. Nobody's actually ever asked me that, but I love people. I'm a big people person.
Love it. That's beautiful. That's just beautiful.
Thank you. Any last advice for anybody wanting to get started on Amazon or that is selling on Amazon that you could drop with us?
This is the last thing that I told my mother, coaching her through she's starting her own business now. You know, she's getting to that age where the kids are all married and, you know, she wants to do something that will motivate her more. The word I am telling myself and I'm telling her is just have patience. I think that we're in a generation, you know, that TikTok generation where everything is just super short, super quick. We want to make $1 million overnight. We want to be an overnight success. I had this somebody that told me this so well. I mean, in a remarkable, I actually write this. I don't know if you have a remarkable. Do you have a remarkable? If you ever want to take notes, if you're a journaler, I love journaling. That's like my new thing now. Get yourself a remarkable. I will send you a link to this after. But the one thing that somebody said so smartly was when you see somebody successful, or at least you think they look successful, because really nobody knows what's going on behind somebody's door. Remember that they have a book, right? And you're just seeing the front page and you've seen the back page and you have no idea how many chapters were written there. Right. So remember, you need that patience. It takes time. You know, you think you see somebody that has just gotten successful overnight. Let me tell you, I'm personally still on a journey and so are so many other people. And just have patience. You'll get there. But if you're giving up or you're expecting for this to happen overnight, it's not going to happen. So what I'm telling my mother and what I would, I guess, leave the audience with is have patience. Know that there are people out there that are happy to help and try to find a mentor. And remember, it's going to take time. And if it happens faster, then good on you. But it's not the regular. It doesn't happen overnight for anybody. And if they told you that it did, they're lying.
Pearl, thank you for sharing this chapter of your book with us. And until next time, stay fearless. If you're looking to get started selling on Amazon or maybe need some help with your current sales on Amazon, go to fearlesssellers.com. That's a lot of S's in there. Fearlesssellers.com. Use coupon code FEARLESS for 50% off our next event. Thank you for listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. Until next time, stay fearless.